If you're connected to the internet, you have an IP address. And while the net itself might seem infinite, IP addresses are not. IP version 4 addresses are supposed to run out. Internet service providers are upgrading to IP version 6. At least, that's the plan. Jim Cowie is the chief scientist at Dyn, an internet performance company. He tells Tom Temin why brokering IPv4 addresses is a booming business.
The fact is, the IPv4 internet and the IPv6 internet are in some sense different things, and people are still doing a lot of business on the IPv4 internet, and the IPv6 transition has taken us many years longer than we expected, given the pressure from the exhaustion of IPv4. There's a lot of business left to do on the IPv4 internet. And so to future-proof their businesses, a lot of people are still doing what it takes to make sure they have enough address space to run their business.
Now, the switch manufacturers, some of the hardware vendors, pretty much all of them have been building in dual ability for a long time now into their network equipment. So shouldn't that take care of the problem?
Well, that's absolutely true. And I think most of the equipment you can buy today is absolutely capable of doing either IPv4 or IPv6, in no small part because businesses and governments, including the U.S. government, have done a really good job of stating clearly that's a requirement. I will not buy equipment that's not V6 capable.
And you said that, though, the IP version 4 internet is different from the IP version 6 internet. Explain more about how that works or doesn't work.
Well, it's interesting. I think the people who proposed IPv6 back in the mid-90s and finally when it was adopted in 1999 had a choice to make. They could either make a new IPv6 that was backwards compatible so that the traffic from the V4 internet could continue to travel on the new IPv6 internet, or they could make a clean break. And these were smart engineers, and I think they wanted to do it better the second time. So they made a little bit of break with tradition, and unfortunately, the two networks are not directly interoperable. If you want to play in both IPv4 and IPv6, you have to do what's called dual stack. You actually have to be prepared to speak both. As long as there are people in the world who can't speak IPv6 and you want to reach them on the internet, you're going to have to speak some IPv4.
Now, all of these devices that have been coming out, there's millions and millions of smartphones, for example, and they all have an IP address. Is that all IP version 4?
Actually, a lot of it is now IP version 6. People are rolling it out. I looked the other day, I connected to a website, and it told me, hey, you're coming from an IPv6 address on your mobile phone. I was pleasantly surprised to see that. But it should be transparent to the end users in those cases, and in many cases it is. The problem really comes from, say, an enterprise, somebody who's publishing content or running a server who has to sort of hedge their bets. Do I want to be available to both audiences, both the new IPv6 audience and the old IPv4 audience? In those cases, you're going to have to connect to both networks. You're going to have to purchase internet transit from a provider who can do both IPv4 service and IPv6 service. So it's a little bit of extra cost.
And what are some examples of providers that are capable of doing that? I mean, can the Verizons and so on of the world and the standard carriers, Hughes and so forth, are they capable of that?
Yeah, absolutely. By and large, all of the major backbone providers of the internet who carry the bits around the world and all of the local access providers, by and large, at least the larger ones, especially in the United States and in Europe and in Asia, can do IPv6 now. You can get it if you ask for it.
But considering the fact that, say, you have an IP version 6 phone and I just ordered a new MacBook and I'm presuming that'll have an IP version 6, yet any website I go to, I presume I'll be able to access it. So it sounds like, as a practical matter, everybody is doing the dual stack, or else how else are we getting there?
Well, right. That's the pinch. That's the problem that we face. Not all of the people who host websites have decided that this is worth their time and money yet. There's a ranking published by Alexa called the Alexa 100 or the Alexa 1000 of the top websites on Earth, and they also publish them by different countries. So we took a look at the Alexa 100 in all of the various countries on Earth and said, well, what fraction of those websites are actually prepared today to serve an IPv6 audience? And unfortunately, depending on the country, the answer can be between 10% and maybe at the very upper end, 40 or 50%. They're still not getting the job done.
And how is the United States doing, and is there any breakout of federal websites?
I don't know. That's a great question. The United States, I think, is doing better than most countries on Earth, but still a long way to go. I mean, the majority of content on the Internet is still not available for people with an IPv6 Internet connection unless they go through a translation step to allow them to get to a legacy IPv4 content site, which it should be pretty easy.
We're speaking with Jim Kelly. He's the chief scientist at Dyne. And so at some point, will this become apparent to users? Is the split getting wider and wider, or is like a branch off happening?
It's interesting. I think you will eventually find sites on the Internet that may just decide to put their foot down and say, you know what, the time is up. It's time for us to just be on IPv6. We don't want to pay the extra to still be on IPv4. But I think that those days are pretty far in the future.
So then if an organization wants IP version 4 addresses, I remember the stories, it's got to be 5 years ago when they said there was 50,000 left here and this company has 20,000 left. And so are there any new ones left? Otherwise, is it all a secondary market?
There are only a few left. In many places in the world, they're completely gone. They've been dwindling for years, and you know, we've started seeing exhaustion 4 or 5 years ago, and now it's really setting in and becoming acute. And as a result, the secondary market has appeared. People are paying in cash, perhaps you know, as much as $10 per IP address, in order to harvest unused or less used IPv4 address space from companies that are not using it.
And so that means there might be a lot of latent addresses from dead equipment, but how do you get those back on the market, so to speak, those addresses?
Yeah, exactly. So a whole community of brokerage services and companies have sprung up to try to help buyers find sellers. There are a lot of companies, especially in the United States, both companies and governments, state, federal, local, who got a lot of IPv4 address space in the very early days of the Internet when it was easy to get, when it was pretty easy to make a justification to get thousands or hundreds of thousands of addresses. And over the years, they've changed their use of the space. Many people never used their entire allocation. And so it's almost like oil in the ground, sitting there waiting for somebody to come and take it out and extract it and send it to the emerging markets of the world where they really need address space fast.
And where are most of these addresses? Are they in computers that are obsolete? Are they in old networking equipment? Where do you find the big caches of them?
Well, I think ironically, a lot of them are just on the books of organizations that got them 10 or more years ago and kind of retired them and never used them. They are assigned to them, so in somewhere in a database, there's going to be a registry that says you own this particular range of IPv4 addresses. But perhaps, you know, you've decided to go with a different internet service provider in the meantime and you just stopped using them. Well, now you can dust those off and call somebody up and try to find if there's somebody else on Earth who might be able to make use of them tomorrow.
So if you were to put yourself in the eyes of a federal agency and you operate a major content website, say, you know, data.gov, which is, you know, a crucial website, or any one of the large agency departmental websites, which are crucial to fulfilling their mission and their legal responsibilities, what should you think about now in terms of whether you're going to go mixed for a while or when to jump over to full IP version 6?
Well, I think at this point, probably most major content websites really need to be running a dual approach where they're available natively to both an old IPv4 audience and the new IPv6 audience. If you have IPv4 addresses, you may want to hang on to them, but you should realize that over time, their value is probably going to decline significantly as more and more people transition to the virtually limitless IPv6 space.
So sell them now while before the skyscraper gets built and they don't care about your property anymore.
Well, it's a very interesting thing to think about market speculation. You know, the people who are now paying $10 or $11 or $12 per IP address for this old, you know, presumably obsolete space are either completely irrational or they're being rational and thinking, well, I think IPv4 still has some life left to it. In any case, I certainly don't want to let my organization run out. I don't want to disappoint my users.
And what happens when you access a IP version 4 website with IP version 6 or vice versa? What happens? Does the browser just give you an error?
It actually is an unreachable website. If the website only has an IPv6 address and you type in the name of that website, the DNS will resolve that to the IPv6 address, which is the only one it has. And then if you only have an IPv4 connection, you can't even get there. It just won't resolve to an address you can use. So that site will be dead to you.
So you'll get a beach ball or an hourglass and never really get there.
Exactly. We're thinking about the fact that there's something interesting there, that IPv4 addresses are in fact an intangible asset that's worth money. I know many years ago, people were asked to give them back because, you know, we were running out, and for the good of the internet, people were asked to give back their old addresses so we could get on with the business of getting to the new addresses. It was about 2011, I think, when Microsoft bought Nortel's IPv4 assets at bankruptcy for, I think, $7.5 million. Everybody out there realized, oh, this is an actual asset that we need to think about preserving, or at least accounting for. And these are interesting times, because finally we have a market in which these things can be bought and sold.